Hi, everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler, and this week's guest is Christina McMillan. I was introduced to Christina through a colleague of mine, and I'm really excited about what we're going to talk today about, because she is, even though her title says Director of Research, she works for a company called Topo. She's going to talk about a subject that's near and dear to all of us now, and she's an expert in, which is personalization. She has a variety of expertise, but since we're kind of funneling this into a 20-minute conversation, we decided that personalization was something near and dear to everyone's heart. We're all struggling with it. We don't know really what the framework and method looks like, or if there's a system we can put into place. So Christina is going to set us straight today. Welcome to the podcast, Christina.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us first about Topo, because I pronounced it incorrectly. tell us a little bit about that, because people are like, what?
Sure.
So start there, and then we'll dive. You can just dive right into personalization and start enlightening us and educating us about that.
Sure, I'm happy to. So Topo is a research and advisory firm. So similar to a Gartner group, although except we don't focus on IT, we focus exclusively on sales and marketing organizations. We have dedicated practices for sales development, and marketing. And what we do is we help our clients through executive advisory. We do a ton of research on the market. But what we really consider to be our secret sauce is that we exclusively study high growth organizations to understand what are the different processes, levers, best practices that make them successful and really contribute to that high growth. So I've been with Topo now for, 2.5, almost 3 years. But my background has been largely in helping sales development and inside sales organizations lay those foundational processes and ramp their teams. And so one of the questions that always comes up, either in advisory or even just in passing, is, you know, with all of the trends out there and sort of this shift to account-based that a lot of teams are talking about, we've seen sort of historically everyone moving away from batch and blast and sort of generic messages to the opposite end of the spectrum, which is 100% personalization, customized messages. And the reality of it is that they're incredibly difficult for an SDR to create. And so we've seen some amazing bright stars out there. People love to throw up those, I call them those silver bullet emails, where it's like, well, of course somebody would respond to that. It's like the most beautifully crafted email I've ever seen. The trouble is, really less than 10% of SDRs can create emails like that. Mm-hmm. Not because they're not smart, but it's rare that everything organizes in a way for you to have a great trigger event or, you know, 5 ideas of exactly how you could help that organization. And it's just too hard. And so the challenge that I hear now is teams are saying, okay, great. I like the idea of customization. It sounds really good. It sounds really meaningful to my prospects, but we just can't do it at scale. And so now we're seeing that pendulum kind of swing back to the middle a bit, and teams are trying to figure out, you know, what is that recipe or that formula for doing personalization at scale? And, you know, we find in working with our clients and some of the research we're doing that it really is trying to distill it down to a formula. So we have our own formula. I'll share. I know we're just speaking, so it's a little hard to visualize this. But if you can think about it, what you're trying to lay out for an SDR and a whole team is really a structure to follow that they can repeat that allows for a level of personalization that's still going to be meaningful to that prospect or buyer. But makes it easy for me to wash, rinse, and repeat as an SDR. And so you can think of it kind of in 4 stages. We call this our messaging framework for SDRs, but it's I have to prepare the message. So the research that I have to do up front to figure out how I'm going to customize, there's a certain amount of things that I need to do. Now, in that, the challenge that we often see is teams go, okay, great. I go tell my SDRs to research, but then they spend an hour researching a prospect. Now, I have sort of 2 responses to that, one of which is, oh, is that bad? It depends on the account, right? An hour on a top 10 strategic account, totally worth the time. But the second component of the second question I would ask or reaction I would have is, did you tell them what to look for? And so too often I hear teams say, oh, you know, I've given my SDRs guidance. I tell them, go read the 10K, visit the website, go check them out on LinkedIn. And I'm like, that's great. But picture yourself in their shoes. If they go to a 10K, it's a pretty lengthy document. Do they know where to look? Do they know what to look for? Do they know what they're supposed to do with the information that they find? The same goes for someone's LinkedIn profile. If I go to their LinkedIn, what am I supposed to be zeroing in on? Is it their experience? Is it the people that they know that I may also want to reach out to? Is it, what is it? Same for the company website. And you can imagine how this goes on and on. And so we find that with this formula in mind, you have to give guidance on how to do that preparation or that research most effectively. So it might be literally go to LinkedIn and look at these three things, but the goal is for you to walk away to be able to use something from their LinkedIn profile as a setup for your conversation. Or right. Go to the company's website and be able to describe in 1 to 2 sentences what it is that they do and use that as a way to identify our customers that might be peers of theirs. So they're trying to answer a question or to complete an assignment, if you will, with that research, as opposed to stomping around the site until they sort of feel comfortable, but still can't remember what it is that they're supposed to know about that organization. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. I love that. You're putting together almost like the ingredients of a good recipe.
Yeah, thanks. And so the second piece, after we prepare the message, there's sort of 3 steps in that second piece, which is actually crafting the message. And those 3 steps are the setup, the engage, and the offer. And what we look at that is anytime we reach out to someone, there's context we have to provide, right? That's the setup. That's the why am I reaching out to you? How am I either mentioning a referral, someone we have in common, some reason as to why I'm reaching out to you now? Some other methodologies like why you now try to position this as to like, what is the moment at which that I felt I had to email you now? Mm-hmm. So you're giving that context to set it up. And then the engage is where we deliver that relevant message to this person. Now, when we think of that in terms of formula, a lot of people sort of go back to their templates. Well, I'm going to tell them exactly what we do with the 3 bullet points. And I may do that by vertical. So that's some level of personalization. But the problem is what we want to do is try to figure out how do I position something that might be useful to that person as a way to engage them. And so in my research, one of the things that I might have had to check off is, do I understand what this person's role is? Like, I know that a manager of IT is different than a CIO. And so I should be able to go back and say, okay, well, how do I tell a story that a CIO cares about versus a manager of IT? Now IT is kind of the one of the most sold to unfortunately, like they're some of the best at ignoring us. But the point is if I can be strategic in my conversation and in how I engage with a CIO versus a manager of IT, I might be a little more tactically focused because that's what their life is like. That's the stuff that they're dealing with, the fires they're fighting, the chaos, et cetera. So if I can engage with them around a particular use case story that is relevant to how we helped another manager of IT in their specific vertical, I can say something along the lines of, you know, we're actually talking to a lot of store operations folks over at Tory Burch. So I'm talking to an IT organization and a retailer. And the interesting thing is you know, they struggle with the fact that it takes 3 months to open a new store. And part of that is because that their teams are struggling with how to collaborate on all of the different things that have to happen to get a store set up, prepared, and ready to open. And so we were actually able to help them just by using our collaboration platform. We were actually able to help them reduce that store opening time from 3 months to 3 weeks. Now I move into the offer. I'd love to set you up to talk with one of my account executives around how they might be able to expand on that story for you. Do you want to dig in a little further? We have a lot of examples of how we've helped store operations folks at other retailers. I'd love to talk to you more about that. And so the offer is not, let me tell you everything I learned about my organization as an SDR and verbally vomit on you, but rather let me see if I can draw you into conversation that provides value to you. Right. And so the SDR, the setup, I offer the use case story as a way to engage, and then I close with that offer. And so now with that formula in place, I know my research is to help with that setup, to be able to tell the story, and then to be able to have a compelling offer. I'm able to wash, rinse, and repeat in that same structure. So I'm a parent, but I sort of use the analogy of bowling, right? The first time you take someone bowling, if you don't give them bumpers, it's not going to be any fun at all. Mm-hmm. But if you give them bumpers so that the ball can actually get to the end and maybe they can knock down one pin, they're going to get better at it. And then you can start to like give them a little bit more autonomy after that by taking the bumpers off. But the bumpers help you, you stay in line and get to the end. And that's the same thing for an SDR. We're giving them the structure to follow so that they can be successful. And this structure is proven. We often go in and do these trainings with clients of ours, and literally the SDRs can walk out of these trainings. And we get messages either later that afternoon or then within the next few days, which is like, I tried it and look at this response I got. And it's literally because they're not like, okay, now I can think about it. What is my setup? What is my engage? And what is my offer? And it just makes it a lot easier for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, perfect.
Cool. So I would say that the next thing that we're seeing as teams continue to expand on this is thinking about how this framework can carry to not just the individual messages that they're crafting, whether it be an email, whether it be a voicemail, whether it be a social touch, or even that first qualification call, but it's how do I use all of those together? And mm-hmm. so starting to think about, again, there is no one silver bullet email, or they're too hard to craft in this case. And so how do I use my touch pattern collectively together? So multiple emails over the course of a couple of weeks, combined with multiple conversations. How do I start looking at all of those as sort of more complex setups, more stories that are unfolding over a series of emails? So it might be, again, using our example before, an IT manager. I may zero in on one challenge in the first email that I send, but I may select a different challenge with a different story in the second email. My offers may change as well. And so we start to think about how this has magnitudes of implications over all of the touches that an SDR might do.
And we call that sequencing and cadencing in our world, mm-hmm. so that mm-hmm. they, if you're following along and trying to figure out where this fits in predictable prospecting, it's definitely in the chapters on sequencing where we talk about what to say, when to say it, with whom to say it, and in what modality, which is what you just said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So that's number three, sequencing and cadencing and how to format. Now, have you guys come up with some recommended patterns? Because I get a lot of questions about that. Like, how often should we send emails? Yeah. How long should, not necessarily how long they should be in length, but how long should the sequence be? Is there some research guidelines that you're coming up with as the result of looking at the sampling of a large number of records?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And there's no like hard and fast, it has to be this touch on this day. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of data out there that we don't provide on like, what is the best time to email? What is the best time to call? But what we do know is that there is a frequency that has to be bumped up. Like once mm-hmm. a week is not, it's too newslettery for most prospects and it doesn't stand out. It's too easy to ignore. And so where we see most SDRs having the greatest success is 2 to 3 times a week, I am doing some touch that that prospect will remember. And so if I'm doing war dials or in between dials, and I'm not leaving a trace, meaning I'm not leaving a voicemail, I'm not following it up with a note, we don't count those. So they're still mm-hmm. good to try and catch the person live, of course. But of the things that they will remember, we want a frequency that starts to build familiarity, but not so much that it's like stalkerish. So once a day is excessive and most people would get really, really annoyed. However, if I did, let's say a call and an email on Tuesday to try and see if I could get the person, and I had a very compelling message, it's not unheard of that I may try again to reach them either the next day or Thursday. Mm-hmm. Now to do it again on Friday might be excessive. And so that's why we sort of say 2 to 3. And then this unfolds over a series of anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks, depending on, again, how sophisticated the overall sequence might be. And so what we're trying to do is a couple of things. We're trying to increase it such that there's potential recognition. So the first, voicemail, the first email, even maybe the second batch of those, they don't know who you are. But once they start seeing your name rolling across their inbox a couple of times, they may not know why, but they're like, why does that look familiar? right? We've all kind of done that. Like, do I know that person? Or should I know that person? And then, you know, we know that, you know, prospects don't historically return voicemails, but a lot of them don't get as many voicemails as we think anymore, depending on the target market that that prospect's in. And so sometimes they'll just check them. And as soon as they hear the, hi, so-and-so, I'm calling from da-da-da, you know, that's maybe when they hit delete, but now they've heard your name mm-hmm. and your voice. And so when they see that email with your name coming through, they're like, how do I know that name? And now you can imagine if you're getting a LinkedIn request from that person, or a LinkedIn message rather, or a shout out on Twitter, you're like, it's creating this multifaceted profile of this person who's trying to reach you. And so recognition goes up, such that next time you see that email come through, you might be like, I wonder why this person wants to get me so much. And so we find as an SDR, you know, you're creating that that frequency, that concentration that gives you a higher likelihood of getting that response. And this is beyond my research, but we've looked into this a lot, and that's like there's psychology that shows that once you become more human, it's a lot harder for people to ignore you. It's much easier to ignore and delete messages from a stranger than it is from someone who's familiar. And so you're increasing that likelihood that, again, they will actually see that highly relevant, valuable message that you're sending across. And so, again, just to recap, it's usually like 2 to 3 touches. Sometimes 2 to 4 is okay if you're doing double touches, like calls and emails together, per week for 2 to 4 weeks. Now, if you're doing very strategic account based with very high value offers, you could potentially layer in another touch or two per week, highlighting those offers, because again, they're relevant to the person, and you can potentially stretch that to the full 4 weeks. But after that, it's very important. People can get fatigue if that frequency continues. So that's why the once a week for a year newsletter is very easy to ignore, because you're just used to it. It fades into the background. And so this concentration has to come to an end. And we, you know, we talked a little bit before about, you know, the closing emails. The first time we all got that, have you been eaten by alligators note, we actually thought it was funny. We were like, that's pretty cool. But the 15th time I got it from an SDR and it wasn't executed very well, I was like, okay, now I just know that it's been widely adopted, so it's not as effective. So we have to try something else. But by closing out that communication, we're letting the person know it's going to stop. And that gives us the space to let them rest for a couple of months, depending on, you know, how we're targeting folks. We may rest them for 2 to 4 or even 6 months and then come back to them and try again with more relevant use case stories and high value offers.
Yeah, I definitely am a fan of incubating, depending on the list size and whether you have the luxury to do that. Some of my clients are a top 300 accounts and that's it. So they've got to figure out ways to incubate, but maybe they incubate by persona. But there's definitely an incubation process where you let them rest and go to sleep and then you come back later.
Yeah, not be annoyed.
But I'm jumping for joy and giddy over here to hearing you say the 2 to 4 weeks, 2 to 4 touches. It's like twisting the arms of my clients when I tell them, please, we need to do at least 2 a week. And they look at me like, I can't do that.
Yeah. Then we're spread too thin.
Yeah. So we have nothing of value to be able to share with these prospects. And they look at me like, that's a low blow.
But it's true, right? Like we've seen the following up, circling back, checking in. And it's like, definitely. Can we just tell another story?
I like to do more story. I have the red, you know, the circle with the red line through just checking in. I do not let my clients do that, but I do love the stories and I like the cliffhangers where you're, you know, you're doing email sequences, like much like the series of television shows where you have that cliffhanger at the end and they have to tune into the next email to find the solution to the cliffhanger. So I like a lot of the persuasive copywriting techniques that, keep us engaged to utilize that in the cold streams and even in the working status when you've got someone that you know they're in need of your service and you're trying to get them to that first meeting or beyond.
Yeah. And I'll just tell a quick story of a client I had that I thought was so, it was just such a fun example in that it was possibly one of the most unsexy prospects that they were going after. So this particular SDR, actually, we were trying to solve his challenge around personalization. And he was he was targeting public utility managers at water city water districts in the All UK. Right. We're like, okay, how do we make this interesting? Right. And so he had one use case. That was it. He says, we have one client and it's working smashingly for them. And we're like, okay, great. Let's tell his story. So, you know, I forget the particular name of the customer, but let's say it was John Smith at, you know, Essex Water District. And so he would literally, he sent one email to 50 targets and he said, we are working with John Smith at Essex, whatever it was. And he was struggling with this problem. He had a very specific, like there were tons of problems he was struggling with, but we just highlighted this one and we actually were able to help him reduce, you know, that particular bad metric by X percent. Would love to just talk to you about how we might be able to do something similar for you guys. It was a super simple, but targeted story. He got a 56% response rate and 30% of them were meetings. And it was on one email.
Wow, that's great.
Because it just mattered to them, right? They were like, you're talking to me. You get my people. You get people just like me. I'm just like John. And so it's just that, you know, people will respond when it's something that's valuable to them. Now, you can't guarantee that 100% of the time they have that specific challenge. I often get this question from SDRs. What if I pick the wrong challenge? And I'm like, no problem. Don't give me, like, we're always talking about how prospects never read our emails or whatnot. And now you're telling me that you expect every single one's going to read your email and not want to talk to you. I'm like, no problem. Right. They're not going to remember. And so lead with another challenge story the next time. And so I'm like, just keep trying them on until you find one that resonates. Like you are trying to be helpful and you're doing so in the language that matters to these people. If you piss someone off, no problem. That's that particular prospect. I guarantee that will not happen across the board.
Yes, right. It's what I call the, unless they're carrying you out of the office, physically removing you, it's okay to continue.
It is. That's a great way to look at it.
Well, it actually happened to me back in my selling days. That's why I can use that phrase with authority.
There you go. It's awesome.
All right. So we're on number four. So we've got research to recap. And we got some great ideas from Christina that it's important for you to outline what areas, even specific locations, especially if you're a publicly held company, you're going through those gigantic documents that do give you a lot of information, but you need to know where to look. Just set up a research. Now, tell us again that number, you know, an hour for a large account, a top 10.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
In the book, we talk about it take 10 to 15 minutes per what we call extended universe accounts, which are important, but, you know, not as important as the top 10. So what's that range?
That's a great question. So, I mean, I would say that it's rare that I run into, I mean, it has to be a strategic account if you're going to spend an hour. More so what I see happening is SDRs are spending 30 minutes on what's called normal accounts for them. And that's too much time. That's just too much time. And so if we're very specific about what they're looking for, they should be able to execute that in 3 to 5 or 5 to 7 minutes, depending on that. Okay. That account. And so it's, you know, if I'm setting up the whole pattern, the whole sequence, and I'm doing so upfront, like I do see some SDRs do that such that they can set it to send on certain days. Then I may spend a little bit more time making sure that I do understand their profile. I know which specific stories I want to tell and how they're going to unfold over the 2 to 4 weeks. Then I may spend time a little bit more on that prep stage. But it should be quick and easy for me to find that because again, the whole goal is to run through the formula, wash, rinse, repeat. It should be like definitely 10 minutes or less for most accounts. If you've got complex and or there's expansion opportunities where we need to know a little bit more about what we're already doing in there, I would layer in maybe an additional 5 to 10 minutes. It should definitely be in the 5 to 10 minute range for most accounts.
Okay. And I will add, I have one client who actually has a research group that does the research for SDRs. How wonderful is that?
That's great. If you can do that, that's even better. Because then, you know, we've done the same thing. We've told that research group exactly what to look for. So we can structure that information for our SDRs so they can just take it and customize the message. It's great.
I know, it's so great. Okay, so now we're moving on to item two, which is crafting. And you're very specific there, the setup, the engage, the offer. So we won't dive into that one too deeply. In the book, for those of you who have read Predictable Prospecting, there's the Compel with Content framework, which follows very similarly to what Christina was talking about with setup, engaging, and offer. The difference is the offer for us is sometimes help, 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 then ask. So the offer is more helping than it is asking in some of our sequencing. And then the third one was the actual sequence, which she gave us some really good advice about 2+ touches a week, everyone. So what's the fourth one?
The fourth one, gosh. to us, like we always look at it as you have to establish the right process. You have to help them wash, rinse, and repeat manually. And then you got to find a way to automate it where you can. Okay. So technology is the fourth one to us generally. Yeah. In that we have to figure out, like you said, are there ways to make this easier and more scalable for the teams? So can we have someone else do the research? Or if we know exactly what we're looking for, can we go out there and find a data solutions vendor that can give that to us without my team having to do that individually stomping all over the internet?
Right.
And so technology would be that next piece. And we know that for particularly outbound teams who are having to do a lot of this prep, because I don't always have something to refer to and latch on to, are there ways that I can then organize all of those touches that we want them to do? The 2+ per week, we know that, you know, the sales email, the dialing automation, the general engagement vendors are starting to blend all of these multiple touches into their platforms, and they're good, but we know the teams are still struggling with the great. I've got them all set up in my cadences and sequences and outreaches and whatever it is. I need to make sure that I'm thoughtful around prioritizing how to execute those, because they set them up and then they find that they went on vacation for a week and they came back and they've got 1,000 overdue in those sequences.
Right.
And
chaos.
Chaos. So they can still execute them, but making sure that, you know, we're staying on top of what we need to do and helping them make choices around how to manage that technology.
Right. So the last one is, you know, it's putting in the necessary, people call it stack, people call it technology, process,
support.
But the goal is to maximize return on effort, ROE, people. That's really where, once we get this, we figure out the perfect ingredients for our perfect recipe, for our perfect segment of account, then what we're going to do is to give us that rinse and repeat capability is we're going to latch on to the technologies that will allow us to maximize return on effort. And some things still will be manual. Some things will be automated. Some accounts will run complete automation. Some accounts will run with hyper-personalization. All right. So Christina, coming up next, this has been great. I think, you know, the structure to follow for this personalization is wonderful. Now, people are driving in their cars right now, or they're on the treadmills. I'm not sure how they listen to this podcast, but how do we get off the whatever we're on and actually look up from you how we can dive into this deeper? Where should we go? What tools do you have? How do we get more of you and this research that you've done?
Yeah. So, I mean, we certainly work with clients on a lot of this stuff. But for anyone who's just interested in peeking in, we do a variety of things. So we have our blog where we publish some of our seminal research and some of these best practices. We also do quite a few events. So it's one of the more special things that I think Topo does. And it's actually one of the reasons that I was intrigued to join Topo, in that we do what we call councils, but we do them specifically. I think there's a lot of council events and meetups and stuff out there that are great. They have panels. I think they're amazing resources. But the one thing that always struck me as particularly interesting about Topo councils is that we really dig in thematically to very specific problems, like this one we talked about today with personalization. And we do so with peers. So we have a sales development council that brings sales development leaders from various sizes of teams, various stages in their careers, various evolutions of the organizations that they serve, And we bring them together and we say, okay, great. Let's dive into the challenges around personalization. Let's share in a very active way, not just, networking, but let's actively share what our challenges are and how everyone in the group is addressing those. And so we usually get together, depending on the size of the event, 20 to 40 sales development leaders to talk about these types of things. And I think they're pretty darn magical. They're a great way to meet peers, but they're just a great way to walk away with, as I think I mentioned to you before, Utopo really believes in thought leadership, but we believe equally in specificity. We believe that our job is not only to sort of pose these utopias of where we want you to get to in terms of personalization or the way you do outreach or whatnot, but actually trying to help you figure out the steps to get there. And so one of the things at Council that we find particularly interesting is people walk away with those things that they can go do with their teams right away. So it's like, okay, I understand that ideally my team should be here, but to get on the road to that, I take this very next step and then this very next step. And so they feel like there's stuff that they can go do to get closer to that ideal. So those councils are pretty magical. We also do an annual event where we get together sales and marketing leaders to talk about all of these kinds of things, but we have a dedicated track for sales development as well as sales prospectors. So we do, we call them rep effectiveness workshops where actual reps will come and say, look, I want to get better at my craft. What's the best way to do discovery? What's the best way to do prospecting? What's the best way to do outreach, personalization, all these different things? And we'll walk reps through them. We also do equivalents for the managers, which is like for sales development in particular, the revolving door of personnel in this team. How do I manage that? How do I have better practices and fail safes in place to protect consistency around pipeline generation? So we'll tackle things like that. And we certainly present some of our research, but we actually feel that there's a lot of learning to be done from your peers. So we call them teardowns. We put peers up on stage and have them walk you through all of the trials and tribulations that they've gone through and how they've come out on the other side. And so it's a great opportunity to get more visibility into that. And we have that coming up in late March here in San Francisco on, I believe, the 20th and the 21st.
That would be 2018.
Correct.
This is airing now. It's getting close to October 2017 that we're airing this. So that to check out that information, you can go to Christina's website. Go ahead and give us the location. And then I'll also put this in the show notes so that people who are driving are not going to stop and try to type or write down at the same time.
It's www.topohq.com. That's TOPOHQ.com. And then for anyone that has any questions coming out of this, I mean, I'm always happy to answer a few questions. They can always reach out to me and my analyst team, analyst@topohq.com. And we can, as best we can shoot out some quick answers. I can't promise that my sales guy won't see it, so I'll do my best to hide it from him. But it is a good way just to get some answers from the team.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Christina, for attending today. And, this is a topic that's going to continue to be fine-tuned because, as you said, the batch blast, what we used to call spray and pray, is in some areas a thing of the past. I still use it in some accounts, and it depends on the size, number of records we have, and the average deal size, yada, yada, yada. Segmentation is really important. But great ideas. Again, to recap, it was research, it was crafting the right message, sequencing those messages, and then wrapping up in a process bow around the whole thing so that you can maximize return on effort. Christina, thanks again for your time.
Thanks for having me.